Open your eyes. Wake up, Link.
I'm Luke Summerhayes.
I'm James J. Miles.
And I'm James the Jaster Stewart.
And you are listening to Hyrule Field Report. And Jess, what did we do last week?
Well, last week we were on the approach to Ganondorf. We're in the gauntlet beneath Hyrule Castle.
And Jay, what are we up to this week?
Well, this week, it's the fight you've all been waiting for. You've been waiting a whole week for the fight of the century. Link versus the Demon King Ganondorf. Who will win? Probably Link, but we'll find out soon.
First, we got some Zelda news.
Oh, shit, oh.
We don't really, I just want it to be funny to drag out getting to the fight. <long because. laughs> How many side tangents can we go down so that we have to do the fight next week?
Big David Tennant leaving Doctor Who energy. I don't want this to end.
We could talk about the music, I'm pretty sure, didn't we? We didn't kind of really touch on that. Isn't there like great music that plays during the fight of the Demon King army?
Yeah, the Demon King army has banging music. Yeah. I actually did want. I mean, listeners will have heard it while we're talking.
Yeah.
But it is worth bringing up. It's very exciting music.
It's so good.
I mean, this whole game. I mean, well, you know, Zelda, the entire
series. I feel
series,
though, like
right?
It's kind of. Feel like it was like. Extra special, like, I felt like Nintendo like fully going in on the music after people saying Breath of the Wild wasn't all that good.
Mm.
So like, yeah, well, people, like Nintendo know, like, going, oh really? You think so?
Cracks knuckles. Let me show
that,
you.
Yeah. Had that sort of sparse soundscape thing, which I think worked really well in context.
Yeah, I think it was in, but it was on purpose.
But I understand why people missed the sort of
like this, the music,
the more elaborate point, soundtracks.
It's just Nintendo, like the most kind of playful and almost kind of. Showing off at some point. It's great.
Love oh yeah, they're untouchable.
So yeah, we step into where we left off last time. We were just about to have a showdown with Ganondorf, and now this time we step into his chambers, his throne room. I don't know even what to call it. His place of revival, because he's no longer a hideous shrunken mummy.
Actually, yes, he is.
Oh, he starts off like that. Yes, you're right.
He talks to you as the mummy and then transforms back into his, you know, healthy self.
That's right, yes.
How disappointing. This world should be shrouded in darkness, not bathed in insufferable light. These weak, peace-loving cowards running rampant. It would have been more satisfying to overcome a worthy foe. Regardless, I will reshape this world as it was meant to be. I will crush any opposition. I will rule. That is what a king must do. Do not look away. You witness a king's revival. And the birth of his new world.
Yeah, he has a little chat first about the world being shrouded in darkness and reshaping the world, and very much talking about how he's, you know, going to be a mighty king. And he drops a line that, if you've watched the trailers, a mighty, I'm going to be a mighty king. Yeah, Ganondorf.
So Zelda the musical.
Ganondorf does a full musical number.
That's course. Where they go with the next game. Turn out it's Zelda the musical.
Okay, so Zelda the movie releases, you know, 2026, whatever. It's beautiful. It looks like you said, it's going to look like a live action Ghibli. The entire film is a musical. How do you react?
I'm all in.
Yeah.
Look,
I think that's the perfect solution. Link never talks, but he can sing.
Look, if they're making Joker 2 into a musical, why the hell can Zelda not be a musical? Go for it.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, he drops a line that would have been very familiar if you've watched the trailers countless times, like I probably did, which is where he talks about you witness a king's revival, which I think now that we know where the line comes from, like from the start of the final boss fight, is a pretty baller move to include that line in the trailer.
In the trailer, was it clear it was Ganondorf saying it?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, because like that could have been Rauru or another king saying that.
Well, he's very villainous. He says, "Do not look away. You want the king's revival and the birth of his new world."
So, okay, like... it includes the whole last line in the trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
I see.
Which I kind of, because it kind of cuts that with Ganondorf clearly, like, I think it's the scene where he gets the power of the Secret Stone and, you know, goes Super Saiyan, and that memory that we saw before. I think that plays in the original trailer. If I remember rightly, I could be totally wrong. But that's what's in my head, so there we go. But yeah, he, after that happens, he then becomes no longer shrunken and becomes his buff man form.
Yeah, Ganon buff.
Mm-hmm.
Ganon buff. Ganon buff. Buff Ganondorf. Let's just imagine that above yourself, but...
This is the Ganondorf in the amiibo.
It is, yes. This is the one
buff
that was...
dude in a one-shoulder sort of kimono toga thing.
Yeah, there's huge samurai vibes to this showdown, right? Just like...
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then it ends up being like a... the sort of cool one-on-one duel that everyone was missing from Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, so... I think...
It actually is quite close to... Wind Waker Ganondorf.
Do you mean in design or the fight?
The design more so than the fight.
The design, yeah. I guess he's... Wind Waker Ganon had that kind of like...
Yeah, like
chunky...
middle-aged buffness. Where
yeah,
kind of
yeah,
chunky.
Like proper like dad bod muscular. Like aging
what
rugby player.
What actual strong people look like.
Yeah, yeah, like age... Yeah, yeah, that's it. That's it. And yeah,
well, yeah, this time he's got the rippling, you know,
it's probably
Dave Bautista,
Conan the Barbarian levels of musculature. Yeah. He's jacked. He is jacked.
He's whatever species Brock Lesnar is. Not the same one as us.
That reminds me, like back when like Brock Lesnar like first got introduced to WWE. My cousin always said it looked like there was like a tiny guy in his neck controlling a guy in a muscle body. Because he had the big giant neck muscles he's got.
So yeah, the thing with this showdown with Ganon is that he has three different weapons that he's going to use, which... Mm. I suppose kind of emulates what Phantom Ganon does, right? Because you have three different
versions
of the Phantom Ganon fight.
It makes him a good counterpoint to this version of Link.
True, yeah.
And if you think in previous Zeldas, Link's usually just had the Master Sword, or maybe a couple of different options for sword.
Yeah.
And then Ganondorf has also just had a sword, and it's been a one-on-one sword fight.
Or in Link,
now Link might
he
come
has
in...
two swords.
I like that over time, because like in Tears of the Kingdom, like when you fight the Glimmhands and stuff like that, it's random. Like Phantom Ganon, like appears as random on your weapon he fights you with. So it's good, like you're kind of practicing throughout your adventure until you get to this point.
Yeah, because I suppose
this fight is kind of like the Phantom Ganon fights are basically training for this fight.
Yeah. Except I think this. I think obviously Ganondorf has got a few extra moves in his he's got, he can fight with his sword naturally, and he's pretty tough. He's pretty tough in that form. If you get hit by it, you will take a big chunk of damage. And am I right in saying it's also gloom damage?
Yes, so this is when I realised I had to go back and cook myself some blue damage food.
You can still, dodge them, smack back. And the Master Sword is a particularly good weapon for fighting them because it gets massively buffed against Ganondorf, which makes sense. It's the Sword of Evil's Bane, and he is evil itself. So why wouldn't it be a great tool to use? But
it also, I don't know if this is true. It feels like the game gives you longer on the Master Sword than it usually
does. Yeah, I think it does buff it.
Because I feel like it never runs out during the final boss for me.
Does it make sense? I don't want to leave you without a weapon to fight this guy, right?
Yeah, and also, it's just... You're meant to have the Master Sword for the fight with Ganondorf. Everyone knows that.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
Even if you do, kind of... Ultra Hand, or, you get item on the end of it. Turn it to hammer.
But one cool move that he has, which Phantom Ganons don't have, he can do your dodge. If you just do an attack, he can dodge it. Yeah. And he gets the little slow-mo dodge like you do.
Yeah.
Out of the blue, he will dodge it. And he'll do a cool little backflip, and it'll and he'll say "Oh, no chance!" or something like that.
Did you made him sound like some sort of Saturday morning cartoon villain there. Yeah, it's probably a bit cooler than that.
But you have to do your flurry rushes or your shield parries to get any damage on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a cool one. That's the same damage.
Yeah, I love that in a lot of games. I was talking earlier about sort of platinum games. And Okami as well, when you fight there's the big moment when you fight the Kitsune, and you try and freeze time, and it turns out it can move during your frozen time.
That's big JoJo's energy.
Yeah. But it's always cool in a video game when you get to the bad guy, and it's like, oh, they can use my technique.
Yeah, is that what happened in Bayonetta with Jean?
Yeah, Jean, and she's the one you can't witch time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I suppose that kind of stays along with the whole kind of idea of this fight with Ganondorf being he's a mirror image of Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom Link, right? He's got three different classes of weapon. You know, we've got the one-handed, two-handed, and pole arm weapons.
Spear.
He's got a big sword, a big hammer, and then the spear.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
One of his coolest attacks.
And it's very cool.
It's what he does, I think it's with the hat. I don't know if he does this with his sword, but with the... and I'm sure you'll tell us, Luke, having recently done the fight. but if you do the hammer or the spear, he leaves a pool of gloom on the ground. He takes a big hammer.
So with the spear, he does this big dash across the arena that leaves a trail behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And with the hammer, he does this big attack where he leaps into the air.
Big slam, yeah.
But while he's charging it,
mm-hmm.
it creates an updraft.
Oh, so you can kind
you can
of dodge
the air and hit him with some arrows.
Right, cool. Ah, nice.
Which actually ends up being an insane damage-dealing opportunity. Because you can get up into the sky, and if you've got a bunch of Gibdo bones and a Lynel bow, you could be hitting him with five Gibdo arrows at a time, multiple times.
Mm.
And yeah, that section could just be insane.
Well, I was going to say one last quick thing here is that if for some reason, I didn't do this, but I've seen clips of people trying to do it, and I think it would probably cheapen the fight, and I'm glad they didn't allow you to do this. If you try to use, I forgot the name of the power, auto build. To I don't know, pulling one of our friends, the Laser Boys, to help you with fighting Ganondorf. He I don't know what he does. I don't know if he just shoots a beam of red energy or something, but he will totally destroy and wipe out whatever
thing you tried to craft. I was interested to ask that because, on the one hand, for someone like me, I like the combat in this game.
Mm-hmm.
and that would have felt like it cheapened it. For a lot of people, like, building auto builds and stuff, that was their Tears of the Kingdom experience.
I suppose.
Yeah, default, yeah.
So if they'd gotten to this final boss, I'd imagine there's a lot of players who never really learned to parry and dodge and mano-a-mano sword fight, right?
Well, time to open the swear jar. Get fucking good!
So, I mean, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a problem for me. As you know, I played the whole game like it was Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. I didn't even think during this fight.
Was what was missing from Breath of the Wild, is that it was a boss fight that tested my ability to do all those combat techniques. Because Breath of the Wild's final boss, because it was more of just like a big, you know, thing, it didn't feel like a cool duel with an enemy where I was doing parries and doing dodges and getting attacks in. It just felt like a great big monster thing. I think you could do some flurry rushes and stuff on it, but it didn't feel like a culmination of the game's amazing combat.
There were a couple points where, if I remember in Breath of the Wild, like, I think it's from the very ending where he starts to, like, go orange invincible against Calamity Ganon. But I think there were other ways you could disrupt that. Like, and that you could do is, like, what was it, Daruk's Protection, for example, or, like...
And I think it did the Guardian Beams, and you could do the cool parry on
you
those.
You could parry them, yeah. Or you could use the big lightning storm or Bosa's Fury. There was ways you could disrupt his invincibility state without having to, you know, fully engage with the, you know, slightly more advanced combat actions like your parries, your flurry rush dodges, and so on.
But yeah, here, if you're not using parries, flurry rushes, slow-mo arrow attacks, you're basically not damaging him.
Yeah.
And he's also, he's got some very tricky timings. He'll, like, pull his sword, and then he pauses slightly longer than you think he's going to before he goes in.
Mm-hmm. That's a big...
So it's very easy to dodge too early or parry too early or whatever.
I've been replaying Elden Ring recently just to prepare for the DLC, and I've noticed that in a lot of their boss fights, compared to, like, older Souls games, where the attacks had a more steady rhythm, like, they purposely will stutter for a second or hold back longer than you think they're going to attack, which will throw off your dodge timing. And it's cool that, you know, Ganondorf, I think it's appropriate as a final challenge that he does much the same.
Yeah, you have to really learn him, and you basically just need nerves of steel.
Mm.
If you're paying attention and you wait and then go for it, you can do it. But if you get jumpy, you're just constantly dodging too early and blocking too early.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not getting that chance to deal the damage.
Yeah, you just get hit with the gloom and have a bad time.
But if you're good at that, if you have indeed gotten good, you can drain his health bar pretty quick. And that's the end of the game. Congratulations.
Imagine. It'd been such a letdown. No, I think we all knew that when we saw that health bar, we're like, okay, yeah, we're going to have a phase two. Absolutely.
What was your... How did you hit with your final blow?
When I did it last night...
It's probably just a sword hit, I'd expect, yeah.
When I did it last night, my final blow was... I did the updraft thing, and I hit him, like, three different times with a full five-arrow load of Gibdo bones.
My final hit was with an arrow shot. I was just like backing off, and he's walking towards me, and I was like, you know what, I've got an arrow here. Just ping, and he had a little ding in the head, and the last little bit of health sort of away before we went into the next phase.
What a feeling. I'd almost forgotten the thrill of battle. That feeling as blood surges in my veins. I am not even nearing the limits of my power. Enjoy these final moments. I will be taking far more than your arm this time.
Yeah, I think the fact as well that we'd seen Super Saiyan Ganon in cutscenes, I knew that, we need a showdown.
There was no chance we weren't fighting him.
We needed a showdown with that version of Ganon. I actually thought it was going to be that from the very off, to be honest, so I'm actually glad that we did get a fight with, I suppose, quote-unquote normal Ganondorf before he went full-on powered up by the secret stone. But I'm sure you'll intersperse some dialogue throughout this, but there's one line he has as he transforms into fit into super the super version, and he pretty much goes, he does like the line from this, I don't even know if it's a line in Dragon Ball or if it's just a parody line, where he goes, "I'm not even at my final form," or something like that. "I'm not even near the limits of my power," and he drops an incredibly like ruthless line where he goes, "I'll be taking far more
I'll
than
take
just
more
your,
than your arm."
Your arm
this time.
Like, "Oh yeah, let's fucking go."
What I love about this is that, yeah, so then he transforms and his health bar just extends and extends and extends.
What a moment.
Until it almost goes off the edge of the screen.
Like, an absolutely brilliant moment. Like, I can't think of a game that's done that before. I genuinely can't.
I'm there must be, but yeah, I can't think of it. And I love a game that messes with like HUD elements that you form set in stone, and then it starts doing weird things with it. Yeah,
like so cool. And you see him transform, and you're kind of like pumped up, like, "Yeah, let's go!" And you see the health bar filling up. Yeah, let's keeps going. Oh god.
Yeah, let's finish this.
I'm in over my head now. Shit just got real. So yeah, very very cool moment, and I think that's what we'll talk about this more as once we finish this whole encounter. It's such a good boss fight, such a good fight.
Mm-hmm. He also at this point summons in some Phantom Ganons as adds, but at the same time your pals the sages also break in. So then these Phantom Ganons end up not being a big factor in the fight, other than occasionally I would lock onto one of them instead of the real Ganondorf, which was a little annoying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're not really,
the spectacle of it.
They're not really Phantom Ganons, they're more like clones of him, right? Like, they're
They're
meant to be like him doing what he did with Phantom Ganon earlier in the game, but they're in the design of the Demon King, the, you know,
yes, that's true. This version, not the standard canon version.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can more or less ignore them as long as you dodge if one of them gets too close.
Yeah.
And hitting them doesn't take off from his health bar.
You can destroy them, though, right? I remember seeing them.
Yeah, they have their own health bar.
Just give yourself a bit of space for like the more one-on-one fight.
This is another point I just thought of. We kind of spoke about this last time about if you hadn't, you know, done all the dungeons, had all the sages. I'm assuming in this part of the fight, you're all alone again, right? More so than, you know, having to do the boss gauntlet, that must be hellish, because that's, you've got, you know, four or five souped up versions of the boss coming at you. Like, that's gotta be rough.
Like, I'd imagine it is feasible to dodge everything, but yeah, like you say, it's rough. It's gonna be a lot harder.
That's when you're really playing this like a spectacle action game, like you said last time round. Like, Jesus. Mm-hmm. You gotta be playing pretty perfectly to get out of this one unscathed. But if I remember rightly, he's more or less in this form in terms of his, beyond having the clones, I think he's more or less unchanged at this point until you get him like halfway down.
Yes, the only difference is if you try to do, like, your shield parry when he's not attacking, he'll dodge out of it. And sort of, so you really have to have those nerves of steel. If you try and do something at the wrong time, he'll leap away and you won't be able to get any damage in.
Mm-hmm.
Something funny that happened to me when I was battling it last night. Actually, this happens on the next stage, but he broke a couple of my shields. I ended up beating him with my President Hudson shield equipped.
Yes! The Prez has got your back.
Yeah.
The shield of evil's bane.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah,
I definitely remember the moments during this phase where, like, you're saying, like, I'm like mistiming my parries or certain hits, and it did seemingly, like, extend the length of the fight. made it more of a, like a marathon, like on my first playthrough. Yeah.
Well, what made it a marathon for me is the... So yeah, Jay, you were mentioning you get him down to about half health.
Mm-hmm.
The Phantom Ganons are gone, but also all the sages are sort of at the edges of the arena exhausted.
Yeah.
And he starts summoning gloom attacks.
Yeah.
Where he'll like shoot gloom fireballs at you or launch them along the floor.
Projectiles, which is probably why your shield got broken, because he'll shoot them at you as well. Yeah.
And it took me a ridiculously long time on my first playthrough to realise this is just classic Ocarina of Time Ganondorf and I can hit them back.
Yeah.
I was just trying to dodge them and then get in and do normal attacks on him.
No, I did enjoy that throwback.
In two senses of the word.
Very, very good point.
Yeah, so there's three different ones he can do. He does three, like, flying projectiles, which you just bat back, tap, tap, tap. He does, like, a big wave that comes at you across the floor. And, yeah, you just swing a sword a bunch. You can knock enough of them back to not get hit. And then he does, like, a circle of them that surround you and Zoop come towards you. But you can do a spin attack and launch the whole bunch back at him.
Am I right in saying... So there's two things I wanted to talk about as moveset in this one, but the first part is, am I right in saying if you get hit by his attacks in this phase, it doesn't just gloom you, but it,
yeah, it did.
Destroys your heart.
It destroys your heart, yeah.
So I suppose that this one, you want to make sure you've got like a full health bar before you're really taking him down in this phase.
I mean, it will start by destroying ones that have already been drained or gloomed.
Gloomed, right, okay. Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
So yeah, it doesn't necessarily... go right to where your first red one is.
Oof, that would have been rough.
Yeah. But yeah, it's, again, like, if you've done enough, like, the sort of shrines most players probably have done to get here, it's not actually doing that much damage. But just from sort of an optics sort of thing, like the same as when his health bar went across the screen, suddenly he's destroying your hearts. It just makes him seem so threatening.
Yeah, it's going to make you panic, right? Like, not knowing that you can't get your horse back.
But he's actually, like, you're actually really close to beating him at this point.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's the
one. Also means that if you've
I'm not locked in here with him.
I suppose it also means if you've been turtling along and, like, wearing him down, like, it's going to show that, yeah, you're going to lose a battle of attrition in this fight. Like, you can't
wear
him down.
You've got to show courage, man.
Yeah, very, yeah.
Triforce of courage, not power.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. So I think this is where I got a bit confused earlier on. So he's got his normal dodge in the first couple of phases, but now if you get a flurry rush off one of his attacks, when you press Y to then begin attacking him, he'll dodge your flurry rush attack in this phase.
Yes.
And that moment is a proper, like, there's two big oh shit moments in this fight. One is the health bar going to the end of the screen, and then the first time that happens where you see him.
Well, I'd also say just the first time he dodged one of my regular attacks.
Yeah, I guess
so.
It's a
bit of an oh shit moment. And then it's like, okay, well, I've got the measure of this, and then he's dodging my flurry rushes as well.
It's so cool. You can.
But yeah.
You can dodge his flurry rush himself, though. You can then turn the tables again, but. I'd imagine first time that happens, you're going to get taken unawares.
Yeah, isn't that how you can get your hit in when that happens?
Yeah.
You're having to basically flurry rush like twice almost.
Yeah, you've got to do it twice. But yeah, the actual point is you're meant to be using those rebound attacks in
this
phase.
Yeah, that's the big way you get damage. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I remember just like most of the time kind of going for the flurry rushing, going back and forth, because it was fun. A few things back.
The first time around, I thought it like that, Jess. But when I thought it again yesterday, now knowing that batting stuff back does damage, he's actually
makes it
like
easier.
Yeah, he's kind of a piece of piss.
This may be just be like the last hurrah move you get in some boss battles in games.
This whole boss fight, actually, it's the first time round. It felt so threatening, and I was playing it cautiously, and it was like a really big boss fight. Now that I know his moves and his gimmicks, it's not that hard. It really is, like, it intimidates
fight,
you.
Right?
I don't mind that, like an in-game but, I mean, boss. Like really, like I hate.
No, I actually, I love just, it. Like, I love not, this boss fight.
Yeah, I was just gonna say it. Like I hate though, like when I games like in-game boss is like obnoxiously hard, and has like too much going on, and then like it's. You know,
I don't mind.
You don't get the satisfaction like by beating it because it was you're so kind of salty over how hard it is.
For me, the ideal is like. It can be very hard, but then give me a final phase where, like, I'm just, I get to wail on it and it's
yeah.
just for funsies. But, like, I mean, in games where I'm there specifically for combat challenge, I don't mind having a hard final boss, you know? But that's not necessarily what Zelda is primarily
I just mean,
about.
I just mean boss fights that are, like, they're not, like, hard. Like, for the sake of it, like, you know what I mean? Like, they're just kind of... They throw too much like stuff at you, and it's just like they're doing it for the hell of it.
Open the swear jar, Dasko. I know you want to. open the swear jar.
Swear jar.
I know you want to. I know.
Like I think it's like weirdly, it's not even like a Dark Souls thing that I'm thinking about.
No, no, it's, no, it's like it's specifically Elden Ring. I think
it's a little indie game called Odalis. Like the end boss in Odalis is just ridiculous. It's like a little Castlevania-like game. It's just, I basically just gave up playing it because the end boss is just terrible.
Damn.
It's too difficult.
Skaven searing hot takes on Odalis here on Hyrule Field Report.
Yeah. Any big Odalis heads in the audience? Devastated.
It's a shame because the rest of the game's quite good. That's few and far between. There's not, I've not played many games that are like that.
But if you were going to have one criticism of this boss fight, it's that compared to the previous one, it's maybe a little bit lacking in spectacle because you're kind of, you're just fighting a dude and you're in like a dark cave underground.
Yeah.
But luckily we got a third phase.
Yeah, we do.
Stand in my way! My body, my mind, everything! Sacrifice it all to destroy you! And cast this world into eternal night!
Ganondorf, you beat him on this form, and he says a line that's like, I don't care, I just want to kill you, I give up my body and my mind. And I knew immediately what was about to happen.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's a thing you would probably be surprised by if you hadn't finished the memories, right?
Possibly, yeah. It is possible to get here without knowing that's what happened.
And I guess what happens here, so we all, just to jump ahead a little bit, Ganondorf is about to eat a sacred stone. Draconov by himself, just like Zelda did. But I suppose that's a way to... It kind of answers what's about to happen. Even if you haven't done the memories.
Yep. And then, yeah, he becomes a big, bad, black and red dragon and grabs Link in his mouth and shoots back up. So I think this place where we fight Ganondorf is the lowest, deepest point of the game.
Yes, it is.
He then flies you up to the stratosphere where you can see the curvature of the Earth.
Yeah.
And you finish the fight at the highest point in the game.
Just a side note, I don't know if I mentioned this earlier in an earlier episode, but you know the sand seal that you can give fruit for coordinates to side quests?
Yeah.
Eventually that will give you coordinates to Ganondorf's location, and you're like, what the hell is so far down? Like, cause it's like negative 4,330 feet, and you're like, what's down there? What side quest is down there? It's quite a cute way you could potentially find the location of Ganondorf if you haven't done the Eagle stuff. But anyway, yes, on to more exciting things than a fucking sand seal.
Mystic sand seal.
Of course.
Yeah, if that sand seal was alive today, it would be predicting World Cup results.
Big shout outs to Paul, the octopus. So this, this is, I suppose, this battle, shall we say. Well, before we get that, I suppose the initial thought is, how the hell am I going to take down this thing? I'm in the sky. If I get knocked off, this is going to be terrible. How am I going to...
Well, we see him, in Ganondorf's mouth, struggling.
Yes.
Not quite in his teeth, but sort of just grabbed in his gums. And then in the distance from the sunlight, you see the light dragon.
Yes.
And yeah, it's very obvious, but it's still just punch the air and cheer moment.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's they've done this a couple times where they've had
Zelda's a factor in the final boss.
In the final boss, Wind Waker, we've spoken about a few times. She's their fire and light arrows. I think she does it in Twilight Princess on the back of a horse. Or am I making that up? I could be making that up. Ocarina, she's there in that fight as well.
Breath of the Wild, she gives you the bow for the final.
That's right.
Phase against the boar.
That's right. She kind of blesses the arrows for you to in the bow, right?
Yeah.
This, she's even more active, just not really as Zelda. and I suppose there's a chance you wouldn't even know it's Zelda by this point, right?
Ooh.
You would just be thinking, oh, cool, this dragon's fight helped me fight. That's great.
Yeah, like dragon versus a duck.
Yeah. But,
You know I love me some kaijus battling, so this is pretty cool already.
So yeah, I think
love
it's...
that the implication here is, although they've both completely given up, apparently, their minds, the only thing that both of them have retained, Ganondorf retains his hatred for Link, and Zelda retains her love for Link.
Yeah, it's kind of I suppose, going into the lore baked into that endless rebirth of the cycle, right? This is something that can't ever be erased from their nature. It's a neat fact.
The fight here is not that difficult. It's about spectacle at this point.
Yeah.
And I think after having the cool challenge battle with Ganondorf, I'm totally down with that.
It's quite similar in mechanics, I suppose you could say, to the Dark Beast fight in Breath of the Wild, where...
Yeah, it's just a big thing when you hit the glowing weak points.
You're hitting the glowing weak points, right?
It also reminds me of Zora Magdaros in Monster Hunter. Because you're just landing on his back and smashing up.
I suppose.
On Zora Magdaros, you land on it and smash up the bits.
Yeah.
They're like crystals, so that's what you're doing here.
Yeah.
So yeah, your Zelda will fly you up very high, you dive off of her, land on the Dark Dragon, smash up one of its sort of little gloom eyeball pulsating balls. If you ever lose too much height, then Zelda will fly you back up again.
Yeah.
And Ganondorf will sometimes sort of shoot a barrage of gloom attacks at you while you're jumping.
Yeah.
And I can't tell how deliberate this is. It does seem like Zelda will get in the way of them and block them for you.
I remember dodging them on my glider.
I dodge them with my glider or just by using the tap R to dive differently. But sometimes Zelda would come and fly underneath me and take some for me. Maybe it's just she's doing her natural route and happens to get in the way. But I prefer to think she was protecting me. Yeah, you smash enough of them on his body. It's taking off bits of his health bar as you go. And there'll be a little bit of health bar left. And that's because you need to land on his face and smash up his secret stone. And then he explodes gloriously.
Yes, big, massive explosion of light and energy.
First you get that anime-style... like all different beams of light bursting through his skin in different places.
Yeah.
And then he just explodes like a nuke.
Yeah.
It's like a pillar of light, like a, you know, the width of Pyro Castle, mm-hmm. with like shockwaves coming off of it. Bright light that Link has to like shield his eyes from. And then it's like you could even see like a sort of mushroom cloud left afterwards once it fades. There's a lot of power in those secret stones.
But after that, as we remain in the sky with the light dragon, we've got one more thing left to do to finish our journey.
Yes, so now we're getting into the ending stuff. I guess let's talk about what happens and then we can talk about our opinions on it after. Mm-hmm. So, Link finds himself sort of shirtless in a sort of spirit realm. And it's him and the Light Dragon and the ghosts of Rauru and Sonya. Mm-hmm. And then together, they both place their hands on Link's magic blue Rauru hand. And Zelda is turned back into the princess.
Yes.
And Link loses his blue arm, he's back to having a normal arm. And then you have one final falling segment, very reminiscent of the start of the game, where you're trying to reach out and catch Zelda. To me, it feels like it's programmed you always fail the first grab and then make the second. I don't know how accurate that is.
Mm. You need to get better at catching, obviously.
Yeah, get good scrub.
Yeah.
No, I really like that moment. Like, it's just like we've been mentioning throughout like the podcast, like episodes. Like, it just brings everything full circle. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
It's connects then, like, everything. It's such an amazing moment.
And again, it's like the whole idea of this is something that games can do that no other medium can't, is that you have control during this section. Like, mm-hmm. as you're falling, you're the one that's actually catching her. It's not just a cinematic playing out. You know,
you're like, you know what? I'm not going to press A.
Yeah, but my game ended. You know, Link and Zelda just splattered to the ground. That was it. Game over.
I almost want to try that.
Oh, I can't do that to the princess. Not for millennia.
I'd imagine it probably just dumps you back to like a point in the fight.
Yeah. But yes, Link catches Zelda, you fall into some
rolls
water.
Rolls around and lands in the water.
Yep.
Which I think can technically be your ending.
Really?
Because it goes straight from that to... Oh no, do we get a little cutscene before the end credits? I can't remember.
We do, yeah. They land back on land and Zelda wakes up.
That's what I say, like, isn't... Also, like, the whole kind of full circle kind of moment, isn't where you land the same kind of lake?
It probably is on the surface. Well, technically, you
drop to the surface for the first time.
You can land on the surface.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure there's
because
like
as you'll recall, I ended up like way off
side. Right. I'm just saying, in a general area when you're like hurtling down to the surface,
it's very possible
time,
that could
sure.
be the first one you landed in.
Yeah,
which would be more.
I hope it is because that would just make it all the more fitting for the whole full circle thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember now that. Yeah, you see them both. Link like carries her out of the water,
mm-hmm.
and she says something like, "Oh, I feel like I've been asleep for a long time, but I felt a warm embrace."
Yeah.
But yeah, and then the credits roll.
But just before the credits roll, really neat touch, you get a big pop-up saying, "Find Princess Zelda, quest complete."
Yeah, and I think at the back in the sky, you get Destroy Ganondorf, quest complete as well.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, that's real nice. So my... A part of me does love this. Another part of me feels like it doesn't work. It wasn't earned. Because they repeatedly tell you throughout the game, giving up a draconification is a sacrifice you can never turn back.
Mm.
And then at the end of the game, they just turn her back with no explanation whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, if there was going to be a third game in this world, or they had plans for DLC or something, I would maybe see that. But
I'm not even saying they shouldn't have done it. There should have been like one of the side quests you do with Minora or something is like, oh, if we do this, maybe there's a chance. Or Link gets his arm back as well. What like if instead it had been like Link sacrifices that arm and then Rauru like, I will use the last of my power to bring back Zelda. Which I think is kind of what they're going for, right? It's like,
yeah, Rauru, I think that's what they're implying. I was going to say, like,
they use the last of their power.
Powers combined of Sonya and Rauru, like, kind of.
But it just feels
maybe
like,
as the result of destroying Ganon and like and freeing like the light and having the big like explosion.
It just feels like Link and Zelda get a completely perfect happy ending without explaining why we get to just negate the sacrifices, which were so emotional earlier. Yeah. If there'd just been like one line, like, I can give you this last gift, but it's going to be the end of me, and then Rauru disappears, and maybe Link just has one arm for that final cutscene. It just, for me, it doesn't feel like emotionally it works. And in the moment, the first time I played it, I wasn't feeling that. I was like super excited, like the music's playing, I'm diving, I'm catching Zelda. And I was like, yeah, that was great. And then as I'm like watching the end credits and thinking about it, I'm like, Minoru like told me like multiple times throughout this whole story how when she does that, she's giving everything up. And like multiple characters have been like, what a sacrifice Zelda made for her people. And then Link just gets to turn her back into a human for no reason at all.
You know how they explain it? A wizard did it.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I get what you're saying. Like, it's on reflection of you, like, completing it again for, like, the second time. And, like, very valid, like, thoughts. But
for me,
I go off of play it, finishing it once, like, I don't really kind of think about it whole much, because it's just, like, it's that typical kind of magic ending of an adventure game, especially a Zelda one.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Zelda's not really that series, right? Like, they have done
But, like, the game gave you the whole moment of getting the Master Sword from her and finding out what she'd done. And we talked about, like, how emotional that was, right? And it does it does often do, like, a slightly sad...
What if they had done...
You have to say goodbye
Link
to the sidekick
doesn't get his hand
ending.
Back, but Zelda comes back, and it's, like, can basically giving up his arm to get
Yeah, like, that would have been great.
Now that I think about it, they do... I've thought a bit more, and they do sometimes flirt with this, I suppose, more bittersweet tone of things. Like, yes,
that's
you've saved
they
the
world.
They
tend to do a slightly bittersweet. You've saved the world, but you have to say goodbye to Fee. You've saved the world, but you have to say goodbye to Midna.
Yeah, or like Link's Awakening, where all these people, I suppose Majora's Mask as well, all these people that Link became friends with, you will never see them again.
I think a slightly sad, like, melancholy, but overall a happy ending, is very much Zelda's tone.
Mm.
That's one of the reasons it resonates with so
I think
people,
just maybe they went with, like, the more happier ending, because you had that part in, like, almost the middle.
Mm-hmm.
To, like, the last half of the game, like, with known Zelda.
Yeah, I also think, the more I'm talking about it, the more I think they kind of were going for what I'm talking about. They just maybe didn't communicate it well enough.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, that you do see sort of Rauru and Sonya and they disappear and that's it, they're gone. So I guess they probably are going for, like, they sacrificed themselves to save Zelda.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, they let go of their last hold on this world or whatever.
They do have that post-credit scene that if you've done everything, I don't think you get this if you haven't done all the tiers and, like, all the main quests, but you have that scene.
So, yeah,
this
is the bit
time.
You have to do everything to get, yeah.
Yeah, the scene after the credits where you see Minoru with the sages and she kind of goes, oh, well, my work's done and I think it's time for me to disappear and fade away. And, you've made such big sacrifices. And I guess that was, it's kind of vocalizing what Rauru and Sonya did. Like, okay, we've, you know, our spirits will now be at peace. We'll give the last of ourselves to save Zelda.
That whole ending cutscene to me didn't feel like it added much. Whereas if they'd made it like completing the side stuff is how you get that Zelda unlock, that would have been really cool as like a true ending thing to get.
Yeah. And it would make sense because you wouldn't know that was Zelda initially, right? If you hadn't
done
all the side stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you'd done all the side stuff, you'd be more invested going, we want to save Zelda. And then you get the whole scene. Yeah, I think that would probably be the way to do it if we were to inject ourselves into the writing team. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day...
I mean, it's also... I think the real answer is this game is made by gameplay people first.
Correct.
And their thinking was, oh, the player wants to catch Zelda at the end.
Of course. And they're right.
And then it's okay, right away for this to make sense.
Yes. And no, they're like, absolutely.
Lads, I've just written 400 pages on why you can't do this. Yeah, but I can, so fix it. Which, you know, usually does lead to amazing games from Nintendo. I'm not necessarily complaining. But when you spend 50 hours on a podcast diving deep into the story...
Yeah.
Clearly they're thinking about the moment itself rather than explain how that moment came to be.
And that's absolutely fine by me. Like, there's definitely some films, games, TV shows that if they pulled like a slightly cheaper ending of things, I would be very disappointed. But I think Zelda as a whole, because it is just a, you know, very classic fantasy story a lot of the times, you know, it's in that terms of tone, like them having this, you know, focusing on the actual moment itself, the ending and getting to that moment, that's in this sense the destination is more important than the journey for it for these endings.
Also, it's, you know, it's Link's a himbo, so he doesn't understand why any of this is happening. He lives in the moment and acts on instinct.
Exactly. And hey, maybe we should too.
It's like, oh, I've got my arm back, I better put it to use.
And yeah, there we go. And that's it. We have finished The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah.
What a journey.
Despite having played it for... Let me check. Oh, shit, I've lost my controller. Why don't you say something?
I think the fact that I've been able to, you know, fairly passionately speak about this for 50-plus hours, or however long it's been, in addition to putting 150-plus hours into the game, is crazy.
Like 200.
Yeah.
As I finished it for the first time.
It's a very special experience. Very special indeed. And hopefully if you've joined us, listeners, along the way, that you've found it special too.
Yep. So I've played this game for 205 hours.
There we go.
I've recorded 50 hours of audio podcast on it. I still don't think I'm ready to say whether it's better than Breath of the Wild or not.
I think it edges it out.
For me, it's just so difficult because, like...
I think it's just, like...
I feel like if you say, it's better than Breath of the Wild, that sounds like you're saying, if you play one, you should play this one.
Mm.
But I absolutely don't think that.
Right.
I don't think you could play this having not... I think you 100% you should play Breath of the Wild before you play this.
Yeah. For me, they're one complete package.
Yeah, like, that is where I mostly fall down on it.
I think Breath of the Wild as a game is incredibly special. It felt, for Nintendo, when that game came out, it felt like nothing Nintendo had ever done before, and it made so many great, amazing decisions in the open world design that it made. I can't think of an open world game that came out before Breath of the Wild that even came close to.
No, and I can only think of one or two since.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there's not many.
And those
Kingdoms one of them.
Quite, you know, those quite clearly I've taken inspiration from Breath of the Wild, as they rightly should. Tears of the Kingdom comes along and it's, you know, it's the world again, but I think what makes Tears of the Kingdom so special is that is how it plays off that world and the tools it gives you to enjoy and explore that world in an entirely different way that you can still, as we said there, have hundreds of hours of gameplay and not feel bored or fatigued at any point.
But I think it's... How do you compare, like, a complete, like, you know, true original, there's never been anything like it before game, to a game which, what is interesting about it is how it plays off that other game?
Correct. Yeah.
And yeah, so, as a thing, like just on paper, like, Breath of the Wild being this completely unique, game-changing thing, sounds, like, more impressive than Tears of the Kingdom being this interesting riff on Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, as I said, it's this whole complete experience in my head. I think the fact that there's been so many points during this podcast where we've called back to Breath of the Wild and we've spoken about what happened in Breath of the Wild, I think it really exemplifies how intrinsically they're tied at their core.
Mm-hmm.
Like, especially if you've played Breath of the Wild before Tears of the Kingdom, the way you're thinking back on how you've refreshed this part of the game or how it makes you think of another thing that happened in Breath of the Wild is part of Tears of the Kingdom's overall charming experience.
I guess I was just kind of thinking of like the kind of more like the gameplay mechanics thing with like the Tears of the Kingdom stuff, like that a little bit more fun than what Breath of the Wild was.
See, a lot
I definitely agree where yous are going though, like with the whole treating both of them as like one complete package. Like,
a lot of Tears of the Kingdom's gameplay mechanics, I think I didn't dislike them, but they didn't click with me 100%.
Right.
So like I didn't build that since I've been doing post game, I've built a lot of stuff. But playing the main game I didn't build.
But you weren't doing it like on your like journey, yeah.
And then like the weapons, I kinda hate Tears of the Kingdom's weapons.
Maybe it's an impression at Breath of the Wild like had on you, so like you're kind of
well, no, it's just
that
Breath
continuation
of the Wild,
to play it the same way.
I have a cool sword and a cool shield, whereas Tears of the Kingdom, I always felt like I looked like an idiot. Because I always had like a thing stuck to another thing, you know.
Reject fashion, embrace function. That's your problem.
No, I will
See,
never.
You don't want
you
your
ladle
spear. Stick spear.
I think from a pure gameplay it's just Ultra Hand, like not just the whole idea of putting things together, just the way you can manipulate and move things around the environment. That whole mechanic is what Tears of the Kingdom lives and dies by, and it lives it lives gloriously in my eyes. And the fact that we spoke a few weeks back about the GDC talk they had about how the problems that Ultra Hand caused them, but how important it was for them to get Ultra Hand working right. They knew that this was the crux of Tears of the Kingdom, and if they didn't get this working exactly right, then the whole game would just crumble around it. It probably was crumbling down around them as they were trying to get it working during development. But when it's once it's in the game, yes, it takes a bit getting used to. Thinking back to the first episodes where you didn't know how to rotate the stuff around and stuff like but
or building boats and them horribly going wrong and spinning in a circle.
Yep.
So good.
But that whole learning process is part of the fun. Like, it's really funny to fail in this game. And it was in Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
It's just another great thing about both of the games. It allows you to like make mistakes. Not many games that allow you to do that.
But I think anyone can say, like, considering the task that they had of following up Breath of the Wild, the fact that there's even a discussion to be had of which one is better shows that they did something incredible.
Oh yeah.
And like, when I'm doing
that
final
boss, almost...
and we're like, I'm up in the sky battling one dragon, riding another dragon. The fact that anyone even debated putting this on their Game of the Year list is insane to me.
Mm. I mean, I can't talk because the big contender is a game I've not played, which by all accounts does a lot of good things for that genre.
Oh, I mean, Baldur's Gate, I'm not saying that this absolutely has to be number one. If you're someone, if you like Baldur's Gate and you want that to be number one, that's fine. But I just saw people like writing it off so early in their discussion,
not putting it in their list like at all.
At all,
just being like, oh well, you know, it's like Breath of the Wild, but more. Like, so it's like the best game of all time, but more of it.
it is bonkers. It didn't even factor into the conversation for some people.
People have been saying this for a while, but just like, we need to bring back bullying.
Yeah.
Like some of these dorks just need a wedgie and getting shoved in a locker, you know? Mm-hmm. And on that bombshell.
So yeah, we'll probably, I'd imagine in our kind of Q&A overall wrap-up episode that's to come, we'll get a bit more granular in chatting about some things that we maybe didn't like, because we were very, very, that was one big loving session, lots of gushing there. The game, no game is perfect, and neither is Tears of the Kingdom. There are some of the things that I'm not a fan of. I can't disagree with that, but there are some points that I'm like, maybe we'd have done this a bit differently. We'll chat about some of that. So if you're sitting there, arms folded in a huff because we've bigged this game up so much and you think it's not the masterpiece that it is, don't worry, we'll cater to you next time, even though we really should.
But we're not going to cater to you that much.
No, just a little bit. Just a little bit. But yeah, until then, Luke. Certain
deviants we're friends with.
We will not be fielding any questions from said deviants.
But if you've enjoyed this podcast, please do rate and review, like and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube. Just search Hyrule Field Report. Give us those 5 stars. In the meantime, we're recording this. It's only April 5th. Or April 4th, I think, for Jay and Jazz.
No, it's turned to 5th, though.
It's gone past midnight.
Yep.
But you're hearing this in the future. It's 4:20. So you've got 5 days left to get in touch with us. If you do have any thoughts and feelings about Tears of the Kingdom or Breath of the Wild that you want to share with the podcast, if you have any questions for myself and Jay and Jess, please do get in touch. You can find us on Twitter at Hyrule Field Pod, or on Facebook, search Hyrule Field Report. You can email us, hyrulefieldreport@gmail.com. All of those links will be in the show notes anyway. And yeah, let us know. What did we get right? What did we get wrong? What are your thoughts? What do you wish we talked about that we didn't? And that will be in our sort of final wrap-up episode coming soon.
And why are we...
Cut-off date for that will be Thursday 25th of April 2024. If you're listening to this in the year 2025... Unfortunately, you cannot message us. Because as soon as we record the last episode, we're all swallowing our sacred stones and becoming dragons. I was going to make a darker joke, and I decided against it.
It's still pretty dark, though, right? Sacrificing yourself.
You're very sick of the dragon, though.
It won't be that dark, because Rauru and Sonya will come and cure us by the game's end, to be grand. Whilst your chance to get questions in is on a time-limited basis, of course, sage words of advice will be timeless, and we need some of those from our main man, Jazz.
Well, it's 4:20 on this episode, right? So, just blaze it. No, I was going to ask. I was actually going to say, like, because we obviously recorded, like, for this podcast for, like, a long time now, like, I was just going to ask you guys, like, what would your sage advice be?
Oh shit, I don't like this shit if you don't know their foot.
Yeah, see? You don't like it? You're putting on the spot, mate.
My favourite piece of advice I've ever heard is never sweat on their time, never shit on yours.
Yeah, that's a good piece of advice.
Yeah. Idleness is the ultimate rebellion against capitalism.
Fuck. I don't like this. My sage words of advice for you all is...
Don't dish it out if you can't take it.
It was going to be on the same line. A similar note of, respect your friends and don't put them into situations they might not like to be in.
Yeah, this is pretty good.
Just for the record, it turns out you can catch Zelda the first time if you're good at it. I just did it.
There we go. He got good. Well,
it only took me 3 attempts at the ending.
On that note, catch us next time.
Cheerio.
Zappa!